welcome to episode 3 of Adventures in Podtaste, the AIPT Comics podcast. We thank you so much for joining us. My name is Jason. I will be your host for this fine evening, which I believe will be Monday, and that would be the 23rd of October. So if it's not and you're listening to another date, go back to Monday, October 23rd, and listen to us on the day that we launched. Or don't, you know, just thanks for listening, whatever it is. As I said, my name is Jason. With me, as always, is my co-host, Dave. Say hi, Dave.
Hello, everybody.
And Dave, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good. Been a long day at work. Our power went out, so I went ahead and started headed home, thinking the power was going to come back on. And I live about 35 minutes away from work. And I got close to home and found out the power came back on, so I had to turn around and drive another 30 minutes back to work.
That sounds like a valuable use of your time.
And valuable use of my gas, too.
Well, you know, I guess it could have been worse. You could have gotten all the way home and then had you come in back from there.
I wouldn't have went back.
Yeah. I mean,
I've got the time off. I've been like, screw it, I'm staying home.
You know, got to do what you got to do. And this is actually, today was all right. It was, you know, quiet day. Phone worked today, so I got to talk to clients and make things work out as opposed to how things went down yesterday. And otherwise, did some grocery shopping, went for a bit of a walk because in Chicago where I'm at, it was aggressively nice outside today. It's like 72 degrees and sunny.
That's nice.
Yeah, it was not a bad day to be outside. So, took a walk, and then came in, watched some scary movies, some Simpsons Treehouse of Horror, and here we are today.
Nice. See, that's what I need to do. I want to catch up on all the Simpsons Treehouse. I know FX shows like 24 hours straight of the Simpsons, but I haven't turned it on to see if that's what they've been showing lately. Is that what you're watching in, or you've been watching the DVDs?
No, I'm watching it on the, I have the DVDs for like the first 10 seasons, but, AKA the good seasons.
Right.
But on FXX, the app that they have literally every episode of The Simpsons. So they actually have a playlist for all of the Simpsons Treehouse of Horrors. And I didn't realize how early in, I guess, the overall run of The Simpsons I stopped watching, because there are so many that I've never seen. And like, most of them are bad, because that's why I stopped watching in the first place. But, you know, I'm going to muscle through and finish all 29 separate Treehouse of Horrors just so I can kind of understand, like, what happened to my former favorite show.
I think I jumped ship I want to say 15, 16 season. So
that's probably about where I stopped, yeah.
Right. And I think we had this conversation before. I don't remember which one was the Homer 3D, but that's when I felt like it started going downhill for me.
See, I really like that one. I just watched this one, and it's still pretty early in the run. It's still in the years when I was actively watching The Simpsons. I just watched this this one that was like a Harry Potter spoof, and I'm like, what the hell does this have to do with Halloween? Like, you just plug The Simpsons into something else, which became sort of a trend in like the early aughts. Like, they didn't know what the hell they were doing. Like, there was that one episode where like comic book guy is the collector and he's trying to kidnap Lucy Lawless to add to his collection of sci-fi celebrities.
Okay,
and,
like, I've seen that one.
So, and that Bart and Lisa are superheroes. That was well after. That was a couple of years after.
I do remember that one.
That one, even when it was on, I remember thinking, this is bad. And it was especially like hurt for me, because my favorite side character, or as Matt Groening once labeled it, aggressively one note character, was comic book guy, and they made him suck. And I was like, oh, this isn't interesting. This is a bad episode. But, you know, whatever. Actually, one of my favorites of those is pretty early, I want to say like Treehouse of Horror 3 or 4, where Bart, having looked through the occult section of his school library, comes across a book that allows him to raise the dead in his awesome outfit where he's wearing like the Michael Jackson Thriller album cover on his head.
Yep, I remember that one.
And they create zombies, and it's not a full-on spoof of any one zombie property, but it does, spend a good, it's the zombie Flanders is there, Barney eating a zombie arm, and Homer's going, oh, he's just like, Barney, you're a zombie too. It's like, no, I'm not a zombie, but when in Rome, like, I've spent years cultivating my Barney impression. I can't do the belch. I feel like that's the integral part of it, but the rest of Barney I got down.
You'll have to do a whole episode as Barney one time.
Oh, man, that's going to not be enjoyable for most people. But I bring that up largely because if you are listening to this on the day it goes live, Monday, October 23rd, then last night was the season premiere of The Walking Dead. Season 8 sees the all-out war storyline come to the big screen as Rick and Ezekiel and the other survivors face off against the villainous Negan and that weird girl with the bad asymmetrical haircut and whoever else is on his team. Dwight, I guess. It's a big season. Evidently, there's going to be a lot of action, a lot of violence. And much like our Trailer Mania episode, it is a property that neither Dave nor myself have watched a ton of in recent years.
I went back to research to see how much I actually did watch, and up until Rick's wife died. So I did it through the first three seasons and realize it.
That's the prison. That was a while ago.
Well, that's why I said I jumped ship early.
I mean, I watched most of last season. I got a little like tired of it at a certain point. I still read the comics, and the comics have been going
for the books.
The comics have been going for 14 years. I still really enjoy it. It's obviously, there's bits of the more since the time skip. I feel like the story has been like a bit hit and miss. I liked the bits with Alpha, and I like Negan's redemption path. Although the argument of should he be redeemed comes to mind. But anyway, it's weird that the show it started bad in my opinion. I don't think that first season was good. The whole CDC story I thought was really dumb in the first season, and they really drug out the time on the farm because they couldn't afford to get new sets or whatever.
That's what I wanted to say. Was that season 3?
That was season 2. Yeah, I think that was season 3.
Okay, because I had a couple diehard friends that love the show, and every week I'm texting them. I'm like, I can't deal with this farmhouse much longer. And then the entire season was at the fucking farmhouse, and that's when I was done. I mean, I get it. Where are you going to go? That's what the story was doing at the time, but it just drug so much for me that I wasn't enjoying it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, the stories became very like one note, I feel like, and it, they make the joke about how Game of Thrones, you're just waiting for your favorite characters to die. I felt like even the writers of The Walking Dead were treating it as, oh, let's just, we're gonna fart around until it's time to kill Shane. Like, they didn't really have a ton of middle story going on. And I know that some of that, in at least that season, I think, was around the time of a writer's strike. And so it was like an abridged season, and they were only able to get so many scripts in.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
I think that was around that time. But otherwise, I mean, I don't know. The acting is, like, everybody praises it. And it's not, in my opinion, all that good. Case in point, I guess you haven't seen this far, but Negan, who I always confuse this guy's name because it's not Harry Dean Stanton. It's one of those three-name actor guys.
Right.
Jeffrey Dean Morgan. Yeah. Jeffrey Dean Morgan, I think, is an okay actor. He's been in some stuff. He was the comedian in the Watchmen, and I thought he was pretty good in that. But as Negan, he's so one note. His job is to lean back and smile at everything and point with his bat. That's right. It's just it doesn't work. And Negan in the comics is fantastic and like this great magnanimous and evil and menacing but endearing presence all at once. And that's hard to, you know, that's hard to recreate. But I also feel like their attempt at it is just poor.
Is weak, right. Yeah. And I did turn the show on a couple times when he first came on, so I just wanted to see what they did with the character. And then, of course, when Glenn got his eye popped out, that whole big thing, I watched that episode, too. But other than that, I don't think I've watched anything newer. And then that other show, Fear of the Walking Dead, I tried behind that one, too. And I got 3 episodes of the first season. I was like, I'm done with this, too.
See, that show made the bold decision to have 0 likable characters. There is nobody to root for on that show.
That's exactly like, what I thought, too.
I guess the main dude, the Maori guy, I forgot his name. I that's another show I've watched. I think I've watched the first 2 seasons, and nobody is likable. Like, the drug addict kid grew on me as time went on. I'm not going to even look up character names because Lord knows I don't need more time spent Googling something while we're doing this podcast. But, like, everybody else is just bland or awful, or I don't like them, and I don't know.
Well, how many seasons is this into now?
That's like they're on like season 4 or 5, I think. Like, really? they're just wrapping up, like I think the 5th season.
I was gonna say, because doesn't one go, and when one's done, the other one picks up, right?
Oh yeah, it's like the row your boat television schedule. As soon as one is winding down, the other one starts up again.
Right. And I don't know, I think it feels too, and I might be using the wrong term here, but Hollywoodized, you know?
Sure.
It doesn't feel like the solid zombie movies of the past or stories and various comics or, you know, novels. It's just they pretty it up too much. And I get it, you want to get the ratings and everything, but for the ones that follow it, you're taking the soul out of it some.
Well, I mean, that kind of touches on something that that we were going to, you know, talk about on this podcast, which is, you know, your own the realities, or what would be the realities. Obviously, it's a fictitious setting, but in a zombie apocalypse, what life would be like? Like, you know, not every woman's going to have, you know, beautiful manicured hair, and every guy is going to, like, you know, the rough patch that you go through is just growing kind of a patchy beard as opposed to, you know, like living in filth. And of course, everybody's diet's going to be shit and all these other problems that are coming up. But we don't have to deal with that. In The Walking Dead, everyone's still pretty. Rick's still got abs. And, you know, somehow I feel like Daryl has gotten, like, musclier over time, where realistically he should be, like, you know, dropping weight from the lack of food that he's eating.
He's
and, like,
up for Boondock Saints 3.
Ugh, I do not need another Boondock Saints movie. But let's touch a bit about zombies in, you know, movies, TV. I guess going all the way back, you know, zombies have a pretty extensive history in movies. Arguably, you could say that The Golem is a zombie movie. It's one of, like, the very first movies from 1915, featuring the traditional Judaic folktale of, I think it's a rabbi who breathes life into a piece of clay to protect his family or something along those lines. I obviously have not seen it. I've not seen a ton of films from 1915, but the first zombie movie proper, at least what's often credited as the first proper zombie movie, July of 1932 brought the movie White Zombie, which may or may not have inspired a band that a lot of people appreciate or really just don't appreciate. And since then, you know, I can enjoy some White Zombie. It gets a little one note at times.
I take White Zombie over Rob Zombie, though.
I would also take White Zombie over Rob Zombie. Thunderkiss is better than anything that he's done solo.
Agree.
I guess the real talking point that everybody wants with when it comes to zombie movies, or even just like zombie culture in general, Night of the Living Dead, 1968, George Romero's seminal, satirical, I guess you could call it that point, take on the other and the person outside your door. How do you feel like the Night of the Living Dead stacks up nowadays, both from its legacy and from the film itself?
See, my first zombie film was Return of the Living Dead 2. Or Night of the Living Dead 2, it's called, right?
Well, there's Return of the Living Dead, which is like the punk rock one. And it's got like music by Fear.
With Lena Quigley?
I don't know who that is.
The blonde girl that dances nude at the cemetery.
Oh, yeah. Her name was Trash in that movie.
So that's
my association with it. One of the first sets of boobs I ever saw in a movie, too.
Right. Me, too. That's what I say. That's my first zombie movie that I remember seeing. So eventually I track back to the original Night of the Living Dead. And I watch it every Halloween. And even during the summer, sometimes AMC or somebody will throw it on there.
Mm.
I still think it holds up. I mean, I think what makes it hold up is it's black and white. It gives you that eerie feeling, and still the beginning sets me off when they're coming to get you, Barbara.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it just rings proper, and you can't remake that or the feeling or the tone of that.
Well, it's funny you say that, because they definitely did remake that movie a couple of times over.
Yeah.
One of which was directed by my horror hero, Tom Savini. But Night of the Living Dead, I agree. I think that it holds up. It's very much a classic. I think that what makes it work is that it's written very much like a stage play. Like,
right.
there are only like two or three different sets that take place in that movie. So they actually do in certain cities, and, you know, I guess it depends on certain theater troops, run Night of the Living Dead as a stage play that you can see. And I've seen video. Unfortunately, I've never actually been in a city at the time that was running the performances, but it seems like it's a pretty cool show.
That's something I'd like to check out.
Yeah, me too. I think that there's like such a great collection of characters, and especially when you think about it in the context of the time that it was coming out, when you have your leads are a black man and a white woman, super progressive for that time, but also for, you know, people like in rural Pennsylvania where this was shot, I think that it does a lot to show that this threat of the living dead puts us all on equal footing. All of us are in this together. It's us versus the zombies. Like, there's no getting around it. Like, whatever biases you may have to be put to bed if you want to survive. Funny enough, nobody really survives that movie except for, I feel like Barbara survives, but maybe I'm wrong about that.
I think she does.
I think she does, too. I think she stays in the house, but somebody... I remember seeing, like, a clip somewhere of her getting pulled out into a sea of zombies, but I think that they may have just mislabeled the character.
Right. Well, I haven't watched my yearly watch with it yet, obviously, as I can't think if she dies or not, but I'm pretty sure she does live.
Yeah, me too. I'm fairly certain that she makes it out.
And see, take notes, Walking Dead. That's how you take one stage and make it work.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be fair, the Night of the Living Dead is about like an hour and a half, and the cast of seven dies. But like, they've gone through like a good deal more in the Walking Dead, but I feel like it may be at a slower pace. But another thing that's kind of interesting about Night of the Living Dead that I don't know if everybody kind of realizes this, you'll see it brought up in other media all the time, in movies and TV shows and like radio and books. And the reason for that is because due to the way that he financed it and the companies that he sold it to and other issues, that movie is in the public domain. There is literally nobody who owns the rights to Night of the Living Dead. It is a free use property. It can appear pretty much anywhere without having to pay some sort of licensing fee.
Right.
That is crazy. Like, that must have like literally changed the landscape of cinema, because I can't imagine anybody letting that shit happen now.
No, it wouldn't happen in today's world. Not at all.
Man.
So, jumping ahead to another sequel, have you ever seen Return of the Living Dead 3?
That's the one with like the sexy zombie girl with like the spikes coming out of her fingers.
Yes.
Yeah, I've seen that one as well. That one was that came out in like, I want to say, the early to mid 90s.
1993.
Yeah, it came out around the same time as another movie that that had a similar cover, Night of the Demons 2.
Angela.
Yeah. Oh God, I love that movie. With the former Mrs. Ben Stiller, Christine Taylor, starring in that movie. Yep. But that was definitely a blockbuster rental for me. Like, I remember as a kid walking through this scary movie section and seeing that standing up and being like, "Yo, I could watch a sexy girl who happens to have like razors for fingers."
Right, and I think the same for me, and then when she, like, pierces her nipples towards the end, and you're like, what?
I mean, she doesn't seem to feel anything at that point, no. So.
But I liked how the hole she had to cause pain to feed her hunger.
Yeah, well, I mean, that whole series is strange in a number of ways. Largely, like, you know, obviously having some zombies that can talk was a new thing.
Right.
That series, the first one, was the first movie to assess that zombies eat brains, like, that's their goal. The soundtrack, like, that it's punk rock, that was always really, like, yeah, that's a fun series in the zombie genre.
Yeah, and I agree, the music plays heavily in all of them that makes it more enjoyable. You have to have that thrash, that punk rock sound just to get everything going, get your pulse going, and, you know, they're attacking, it's just good shit.
And see, my favorite zombie movie is also kind of a sequel, but it's actually like an off-brand sequel to a sequel. So Dawn of the Dead, the original, came out in 78, and, you know, obviously great. That one really pumped up the satire from Night of the Living Dead and had a really cool aesthetic and atmosphere, and God knows that I still get the song from the mall in my head sometimes. You know,
right.
But... in Italy, my man Lucio Fulci, famed, I guess you could call him a grindhouse director in Italy, took upon himself to make a sequel to Dawn of the Dead called just Zombie, or Zombie 2 in Italy, because from Dawn of the Dead was just called Zombie over there.
Right. And
that movie is fan-friggin-tastic. Like, it is scary and gross and... man, there is literally a scene where a zombie fights a shark. Like, it was something I didn't know I wanted in my life, and now that I've seen it, I can't imagine being without it. Like,
and are you ready for this?
What's that?
You're about to end our friendship, the show, and everything in the third episode. The only thing I've seen of that movie is the shark scene. I have yet to sit down and watch that entire film. Not that I just don't have it. I need to track down a copy and take a look at it.
Well, how are you with gore?
I guess I'm fine with gore. I mean,
okay.
It's to the point where I was importing Japan films just because I wanted something nastier, and they let all the blood flow. You know that
they do. Yeah, they go full on anime with it and have the blood fountain spraying out.
Yeah, so gore, I'm good with.
Okay, I'll just say one, like, two word. I guess maybe three word scene. Eyeball scene. The eyeball scene is, like, iconic and horrifying and awful and gross, and they do not shy away from it, and it is intense. It's a great action parts to it as well. Gross as hell, funny and scary, and my personal favorite of the classic zombie movies.
See, I have no excuse for not seeing it.
I've known about it forever.
I've just never seeked out a copy to watch.
I mean, I recommend it entirely. It's fantastic. I haven't seen too many of Lucio Fulci's other work. There's actually, funny enough, there is a sequel to Zombie. And it is also off-brand. It is not Lucio Fulci. So it is like... the off-brand sequel to an off-brand sequel to a regular sequel with a different name from a different country of origin and none of the original people connected to any of them. But one of the cool things, speaking of soundtracks, for Zombie, the music was done by Goblin, who, if you don't know, is...
yes, I'm familiar with that.
Yeah, they also did like Suspiria. They still tour with Suspiria, as a matter of fact.
Yep.
Really cool soundtrack stuff. Very atmospheric, and at times it almost feels like Brian Wilson's Shine. Like there's just they. It feels like they were like, let's put in every friggin' instrument in the room. Come on, let's just go for it. Like they're just really into trying something new and experimental.
How about there's another one, and I want to say it's UK. It might be I think it's New Zealand. Dead Alive.
Oh yeah, that's definitely New Zealand. That's what's his name? Not Guillermo del Toro. I'm blanking. He directed the Lord of the Rings series.
Shit.
We are the worst nerds in the world if we're forgetting.
Tonight we're batting a zero.
I have his image in my head too, like fat guy with the beard.
But I have my phone.
Peter Jackson. It's Peter friggin' Jackson.
Yes, oh my god. Because he also did Bad Taste.
Yeah, he did a whole series of like schlocky B horror movies that in like the 90s or late 80s, and yeah, they're also super gory and funny. And I'd say more. They definitely were the funnier of the zombie movies that I've watched in my time.
But they were bloody. Like, there is an unrated version of Dead Alive, and the whole lawnmower scene is...
I was going to say, the lawnmower sequence from Dead Alive really stands out as pretty funny.
And then, of course, the preacher and his classic line, I kick ass for the Lord.
Yeah. But preachers, tend to be someone that they bust out a lot in these movies. Like, I feel like every... scary movie series at some point or another has a central character that is a man of or woman of faith. Even like the Dawn of the Dead remake has like a guy who's like a chap. They rescue like most of the like half the cast from a chapel.
Yes.
I want to say, and one guy is like the keyboard player there, even though he's like a closeted gay man, which they never really develop, but it's like a neat little aside that they kind of throw midway through. But that actually leads to an interesting little dichotomy in zombiedom, as a matter of fact, because the Dawn of the Dead remake jumped pretty liberally from its predecessor or its base material, if you will, by featuring fast zombies, a move that, or I guess a concept that most people are readily associating with 28 Days Later. But as Dave and I have discussed off the podcast, we don't really view that as a zombie movie. They're not zombies.
I don't consider that a zombie movie. But if you look it up, it's like classified as a zombie people. Zombie movie.
That is patently ridiculous. A zombie is reanimated dead. They're not dead.
They had a virus and it took them over.
Sure, they're crazy. They're one-minded. They're single-minded. They're they're the Red Lanterns, if you will. They are not zombies.
And they're enjoyable films, though.
Oh yeah, I mean the 28 Days Later itself is pretty great, and there are a lot of zombie themes to it. Like I don't mean to make it seem like I'm an asshole, but like obviously they tried to make a zombie film, and I'm just being semantic about it. But the semantics in something as ridiculous as this is all that I have to hold on to.
I'll be the asshole. It's not a zombie film.
But they do great, isolationist scenes, and like him walking through London on his own it was a brilliant sequence. Also, talk about a great soundtrack. I really like that. That's what got me into Godspeed You Black Emperor. But I don't know that I think that any of that the sequel is all that good. 28 Weeks Later.
I saw it once, and I think I saw it in the theater. And yeah, it doesn't hold up compared to the original.
Yeah. I mean, I guess to get back to the central theme here, which do you prefer? Do you like the slow Romero zombies? Do you like the fast, I'll call them the Zack Snyder zombies, since he's the one who directed the Dawn of the Dead remake?
I appreciate both depending on the story. I mean, the faster zombies makes everything more intense, like you have to be quick about it to get away from her. You know, they can now run, we're fucked faster than them walking. But you have to appreciate the slower style, because that's where it all originated. You can't take anything away from Romero and what he brought to the screen, and he changed cinema and horror cinema forever.
See, I look at them as two different genres, largely because fast zombies, you're making an action movie. You're going to have jump scares. You're going to have we got to run to get the hell away from these things. There are chase sequences. Like, it's an action movie if it's a fast zombie.
Right.
The horror that comes from a Romero zombie is the horde. It's just there's so many of them. Like, what can you even do? Like, with
it's
fast
like
zombies.
It's like a virtual death.
Yeah, it feels like fighting against the inevitable. It's a Sisyphean horror story. Like, I think I prefer the slow to the fast. That being said, I feel no hesitation in saying that the Dawn of the Dead remake is Zack Snyder's best movie. And I really did enjoy 28 Days Later, even though I don't think of it as a zombie movie. That being said, World War Z, that movie was trash.
I read the book and I never watched the movie.
I read the book and then I watched the movie and I was tremendously disappointed. I feel like the big disappointment there, especially because as you've read the book, you know, it takes place as separate survivor accounts of different experiences through the initial days of the zombie plague. It so speaks to being like a faux documentary series, right, where you could do like talking heads with survivors, maybe show like clips. You don't even have to do all of the crazy action. You can literally show stills and have just actors reading these monologues about like their experience. Because I read the book and I was fascinated by it. I thought there were so many great like bits that they could take from there.
Yeah, there's a lot of good storytelling in it.
Yeah, there's that helicopter pilot who imagined that her mom was talking to her via her headset to get like safe. There's like the Scottish guards who carried around like claymore swords. There's the guys who had like the little wiener dogs that helped them like to like right. sneak out like the zombies. Like there were so many little cool things that were in
there. We have the movie Brad Pitt.
We got Brad Pitt running away from CG zombies that won't bite you if you've got the sniffles. It's trash. It was a bad movie through and through. And now they're going to make a friggin' sequel to it.
Well, because like, it made money.
Yeah, like it
as
was huge. And I think
nowadays,
in China.
You're going to get the sequel no matter if nobody wants it or not.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, I don't need a celebrity in my zombie movie. Like, if anything, I don't want a celebrity in my zombie movie. I would like to think that somebody is going to die in these movies. Like, and if it's Brad Pitt, like, Brad Pitt's not fucking dying in this shit. Like, he's Brad Pitt. Like, he's got to be there for the sequel.
Right. And that's, as soon as I heard that he was going to be in the movie, I just switched off and I didn't pay any more attention to it. I mean, I saw it came out and I know it made all that money, but I know a lot of my friends that read the book, they are on the same page as us and they didn't care for it.
So, yeah, and
I mean, I guess if you didn't read the book, you might be fine with it if you like Brad Pitt, but I'm not going to suffer through it.
I mean, there sounded like so many other issues with it. Like, in one of the early drafts of it, like, Michael Fox, the guy from Lost, Matthew Fox, rather, not Michael Fox, traveled back through time and recreated rock and roll. But Matthew Fox in this movie was like initially in like the initial draft of it, and they even shot these scenes and then reshot them because of like poor testing, was sleeping with Brad Pitt's wife while she was on like away from him, like
right,
sort of like a trading sex for safety sort of thing. And they ran a focus group and they were rightly like, that is fucking icky, I don't want that in this movie, like why is that here? And they completely reshot that and gave Matthew Fox an entirely new character. Like, it made no sense. Like, it
really?
Was, yeah, like, it was just, there's so many bad things about that movie. And the fast zombie element of it, again, changed it from a horror movie to an action movie. And I think that if they had marketed it with any other name besides World War Z, then it wouldn't be as controversial as it is with a lot of, like, fans of the genre.
Right.
It would just be thought of as a bad movie. It'd be a bad Brad Pitt movie.
Yeah, there's quite a few of those out there.
Yeah, unfortunately. I don't know.
Going back, you mentioned the remake of Dawn of the Dead, and this is funny because it's going to bring Musa back into the conversation. Is that the one where the credits go?
With Disturbed, yeah.
Okay.
They also have like the Richard Cheese version of Disturbed midway through.
Yeah.
Like for Down with the Sickness.
Yeah, I thought that was okay. I think the first act was good. The second suffered, and I thought the end was okay. But yeah, the soundtrack, once again, is what stood out for the movie.
I mean, I don't necessarily remember more than Down with the Sickness being in it, but that movie, I feel like, also sort of started a marketing trend that I don't see a lot, but I see sometimes, and I think it's kind of interesting that it started with this remake of Dawn of the Dead, where the first 10 minutes of it, albeit like a slightly toned down gore and violence version of the first 10 minutes of it, was released on like the USA Network like the week before the movie premiered.
Yep,
like,
I remember
you
that.
you got the first 10 minutes of viewing free. I thought that was kind of neat. That's kind of a cool way of putting your stuff out there. It does mean so that you can stroll into the theater a little late and not have to worry too much about it. But
right. And that was a solid opening scene.
Yeah, I was about to say that's a really good opening sequence. Better than even its predecessor, Dawn of the Dead. Dawn of the Dead, the original, obviously a much more important film, but the remake is, you know, it's a fun popcorn movie.
Yeah, the one scene that I was saying from the beginning was when she's being chased and then the woman's outside. I don't remember if she's walking her dog, she's just outside. And he loses focus on and her and just charges the other one.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's one thing that I really appreciated about that movie is that before it, I can't really think of a zombie movie that showed the zombies attacking the suburbs. Right. Like, most of them were in the woods, like, you know, the Evil Deads and the Night of the Living Deads, etc., or in a city. Like Dawn of the Dead or like Return of the Living Dead or whatever. But that one showing the suburb, showing where like bland ass white America lives in tatters, like with buildings on fire and people like dying of their front lawns and being chased in the streets. I thought that was a really cool visual that not a lot of movies really seem to take advantage of, except for maybe like the lower budget stuff that right. you see for like a like dollar bins.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, fast zombies, slow zombies, however you do. This is going to be the fun speculation portion of the show, where we're going to talk about how you would react in a zombie scenario. You know, this we'll go all in on already end of the world. Society does not look like it's coming back. We're overrun with zombies. Power's out. Where are you going? What are you doing? How are you defending yourself? I guess the first bit of conversation we should get into, and probably the more fun aspect of it, is offense. Dave, how are you defending yourself, ideally, in a zombie environment?
Well, we had a conversation between range and melee weapons. And I was starting to think about weight with the melee weapons, because I don't want to swing anything too big. That's just my own personal preference. So something like if I got stuck in the house, I'd grab like a fire poker. A chainsaw I would use to keep like distance, but you know, I don't want to do too much damage, get messy and blood and risk all that in my face. I get a kick out of, I was reading something where it's talking about a drill. I don't think I would use a drill. An aluminum baseball bat I'd go for, maybe a crowbar, maybe a machete. Basically something I could swing fast and get away from.
Sure, I think that you've got two good choices in there, and others I have bigger issues with from a thematic element. You got to figure, weight is an important thing to consider, sure, but I think that one important element to consider is functionality. And with a chainsaw, you need... unless you're talking about an electric chainsaw, which is going to be useless when the power's out, but you need gas, and you run just as much a risk of hurting yourself as hurting something else. And chainsaws get stuck. Like, they
right, that's
will...
that's what I said, keep them at a distance.
Sure. I discount the chainsaw. I discount the poker. Like, you might be okay for distance, but it's a flimsy piece of metal. I myself have swung a poker into a computer monitor. Very cathartic, but it busted the poker. It was useless after that, if for any kind of defense. The aluminum baseball bat
that I need, so now I know not to use the poker because it can't even hold up against a laptop.
It's a one hit wonder. It's like a garbage can in WWE 2K. It's gonna disappear as soon as you use it.
So that's me crossing it off my list.
Awesome. I think that the aluminum baseball bat is a good choice. Strong, durable. It's good for crowd control because you can hit a couple at once with it. The machete, obviously, it's a classic. It's going to work. I think that your real winner here is the crowbar because it's multifunctional. It's right. Got like the hook element to it that you can use to like bash in something if you want to do the outside, or use the pointed end to stab or swipe at. And obviously, you get the real functionality of a crowbar, which, you know, when you're breaking into places to survive, it's going to be
a little useful.
It's going to be invaluable. Sure.
What are your choices?
I think
melee.
Yeah, crowbar is definitely on there. I think that one thing that most people don't think about, but a friend of mine who's an avid camper has, is a hatchet. A small like hatchet that looks like a little tomahawk.
But see, that's short. That's small. You got to get in close. That's my point. Need, of, like, the chainsaw to keep the distance.
Sure, you need range, but you also need melee. You need something that you can like hold at like your last bit. And that thing weighs next to nothing and will cave in a skull with a single swing. And if need be, if you carry multiple, you can toss it. You can use it as a ranged weapon. It's much more functional than a knife, in my opinion. Knives have probably more uses for things like, you know, I don't know, if you go hunting, you'll probably have more use for a knife than you will a hatchet, but I feel like a hatchet has heft and killing and stopping power, plus being short-range melee, it's really important to hold on to that. And I feel like we're only talking short-range at this point, right? Because, like, distance, we'll go into firearms in a bit, but, like, for melee weapons, I'm doing that. If you've read the Zombie Survival Guide from Max Brooks, one thing that he talks about that I think is sort of an invaluable thing is a trench spike, which is basically and this is a surreal weapon. I don't think you're going to be able to find this outside of like the craziest gun show that you're ever going to go to.
Right.
But it's a what's it called? A knuckle duster. So some brass knuckles with a pike attached to the bottom of it. So that like the idea was that you would climb over a trench and your enemy is in the foxhole with their helmet on and you can like plunge it through the helmet. It's literally ideal for when you have to combat something that only dies when you hit it, when you destroy the brain.
Two knuckle dusters, but no spike.
Yeah, a knuckle duster is not a bad idea, but that might be a little closer for comfort. That you're getting in too close, especially because you have to go for the head to do any kind of like damage against a zombie. You're putting yourself in biting range to go for that. It's a last ditch effort. I think the machete is good. You kind of poo pooed the concept of a katana before. And the only reason that I agree with that is because that's not what my thought process is here. A proper katana is fairly light. Unless you're in a hallway, you're going to have room to like use it. And it's going to be pretty, like, you know, if you're fighting daredevil zombies and it's always in a hallway, then you're kind of screwed if you have any kind of like melee weapon. But the real issue with trying to rely on a katana is that in this country, at least, you're not going to find a real one. Like, you're going to find like a prop or like a toy or something that's made to look real but doesn't have a cutting edge and you can't even really hone it. Like, when I came back from Japan, like, my girlfriend at the time had bought me a katana while I was over there, but it's like it's a display katana. It's not a real sword.
Was it real Hattori Hanzo?
Yeah, I couldn't get Hanzo steel because, like, you know, a real like katana that can be cut, used to cut. First of all, if I wanted to bring it back to the States, there's all sorts of crazy paperwork I would have to fill out in Japanese.
What? You can just put that on your carry-on and go?
No, unlike they did.
It's not 2 ounces of liquid.
In Kill Bill, she literally has it like sitting next to her on the plane, and that always bugs the shit out of me. Like,
it does
like,
me too.
There's like a cup holder for it. Like, oh, there's the katana holder in All Nippon Airways. but the way that they get around that, like the ones that you can buy are just like flat pressed steel. Like they look like it, but they can't even be sharpened. They can't ever
right.
be
like display sword. Pieces.
Yeah, they'll be like, you know, those ones go for like $100-something, but like the real ones, if you want an actual can sever a human head katana, are like several thousand dollars. And like, you know, that's a good barrier for entry for any crazy person who would want to use a sword against people. But as making it, it does make it like a pretty poor choice for zombie defense. But that being said, like logistically, it's a light sword. It's a very like flexible sword, and it's literally designed to chop off heads. So I think that it's not such a bad thing.
I don't see myself wanting to carry that around.
Sure, I guess that's the problem with bigger weapons like axes or pikes or something like that. Like a wood chopping axe or like the axe that you can find in like a fire security. Like one of those in case of emergency break glass sort of situations.
Yeah.
That my issue with that is swinging it will knock you off balance, and so if you don't land that killing strike on your one swing, you're kind of screwed. But that's also sort of true with a baseball bat. Like, I guess the good thing about
baseball bat, you gotta worry about like losing its edge and everything. That's why I picked aluminum instead of wood. You want to break that.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, too. I think that choosing an aluminum baseball bat is good because you don't have to sharpen it. It's not going to, like, dull, and it won't break. Like, the amount of repeated use that it would take for an aluminum bat to break, I just don't see happening. You'll be dead by that time.
But the most important part of having an aluminum bat is the sound it makes when you hit them.
Oh, yeah. That
you got to have that clean. Yep. You got to complete the experience.
How about for the less prepared, just around the house weapons, like people who haven't been hoarding and preparing for a zombie apocalypse? What do you think the best, like, I can find this in my house kind of weapon would be?
That was my fire poker choice.
Okay.
Just like on the fly, if something comes crashing through the window, what do you have? And I thought, well, what do I have at like arm's length? I'm not going to go for a knife because, like I said, I have that issue with distance. So I thought fire pokers, you can at least go for their eye a good couple times, even though you're telling me that it sucks against a laptop. So maybe it'll be one good one, and then I better take off running.
Well, to be fair, it wasn't a laptop. It was one of those big, stupid monitors that they used to sell in the 90s that was like the size of a car.
My choice is sturdier than what I think.
Yeah. I mean, this was no fucking around on this monitor. Again, one of the most satisfying things I've ever done, though. But my choice for around the house weapon is a claw hammer. Like, especially if you've got like one of those drywall hammers that are a little bit lengthier. The claw on the back is great for, you know, the actual violence portion of it, and the regular part can do its job too. Plus, again, dual functionality. It's going to work for a lot of things. You don't want to do a mallet. You want to do just a regular ass drywall claw hammer.
Right. Then I was saying, worse comes to worse, you can break a table leg or a chair leg.
Oh yeah, you need something. Like you can't. Like if there's anything that Friday the 13th the game has taught me is that when you go up against a monster, you need something. It doesn't matter if it's shit. You just gotta try.
Lay a couple bear traps now.
Yeah, lay a bear trap, hit him with a frying pan, like, you know, do what you can. Like, you know, you're fighting the undead. There's no need to play fair. Like, let's just go for it.
So what about range weapons? Do you have a weapon of choice?
You know, I don't know so many, like, model names and numbers, but I think that when it comes to choosing a ranged weapon, a lot of people are, like, there's a good impetus on trying to pick something that's silent, but most of that stuff is going to be difficult for lay users such as myself to just kind of pick up and run with. Like, you know, using a bow and arrow or like a crossbow, which are silent and, you know, obviously are a big part of the Walking Dead TV series. Really not that easy. It's pretty difficult. And, you know, there's a lot of aerodynamics involved. There's a reason why archery is like a fucking Olympic sport. It's pretty tough.
Right. And then add in that you have the adrenaline going through, and you probably can't aim for straight.
Oh, sure.
Anyway, so.
And it's going to be a moving target, and, like, a head isn't that big. Like, you know, hitting them anywhere besides the head is a waste of your arrow. Like, it's difficult. My choice for a ranged weapon is a bolt-action rifle. I think that, you know, you can get pretty decent-sized magazines in this country, especially, for these sorts of things. I want to be as far away from them as possible. So a bolt-action rifle, they have really good range, so reason hunters rely on them. You can hang out in the blinds and just pick things off from a distance. And they're, because it's bolt-action, A, it's easier to clean. B, you get, like, basically one shot at a time, so there's less risk of wasting ammunition. I guess it does mean that reload times can occasionally be more, depending on what you're working with. But I don't know. That seems to be the weapon of choice for distance for me.
And I didn't choose any bow and arrows or crossbows for pretty much the reason why I said, you said it's going to be hard to aim, and then you have to figure in everything else around the scenario. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a waste of time to play with one of those. Now, I have a 45, so up close and personal, 45 would be my choice for a handgun.
Sure, I mean, like, a sidearm is important as well, but if we're talking, like I would probably want to have, like, a shotgun as well, like, for crowd control.
Right.
Like, there's that
Bill, I wrote that down, too.
There's that Bill Burr bit where he talks about, like, you know, the good thing about a shotgun is you just point it in the general area and the spread takes care of the rest. Like, you don't miss with a shotgun.
Right. And then my other choice was, if I had an assault rifle, it'd be an AK-47.
See, that's one thing that I'm not so big on with the AK-47. It's a good choice because it works as a melee weapon, too, because it's got that heavy stock. Presuming that you don't get one of the aftermarket ones that, you know, takes off the wood or replaces it with something else.
Right.
But it's a heavy weapon from my reading.
They're reliable, though.
They are. They're better than, like, the M16, the American equivalent. Israeli equivalent. It might be Israeli equivalent. I don't know. But you were saying.
No, I was going to say, I would take that over, like, a submachine gun.
Yeah, but, I mean, with an AK, you can you set that to full auto versus,
AK
measured
is full
shot?
Auto.
Right, but, like, can you set it to, like, I don't even know the term here, to, like,
semi-automatic?
Yeah, to just do bursts as opposed to being full automatic.
Just let your finger off.
Yeah, that's my concern, because you're bringing up things like adrenaline and the fear in the moment of, you know, zombies coming after you. I worry about running through that magazine really quick, because that's one thing that movies, I don't think, do a good job of showing people with machine guns, is that magazine goes like that. Like, the whole thing about a machine gun is that it fires these bullets out rapid fire, crazy fast. Like, an Uzi could, like, you know, shoot through a tree, like, it could chop down a tree with a single magazine or something like that. But it does that over the course of, like, 10, 15 seconds. Like, if you hold that thing down too long, you're going through all your bullets.
Right. But if I would rely on that more than I would a crossbow, as far as...
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, thing about crossbows is it's... You could... You know, people will say, like, well, I could just make arrows. Do you know how to make a damn arrow? Like, that shit is not, like, as simple as just putting a stick in the crossbow. Like, it is a aerodynamics process. Like, and, you know, the fletching and all that other kind of shit. But, like, finding ammunition for it is going to be difficult, and you can say, well, I'll just go and get my arrow from the dead zombie. Like, what if you can't? Like, you're just going to run out of it, and then you're going to be carrying this big clunky tool on your back or, you know, in your hands until you get, you know, eventually caught and eaten by these damn zombies.
Right. What about location? I had to think where I was, and I actually have a river surrounding me. I live 5 minutes from a ferry that takes me across the water. So I think if I got in a jam, the first thing I would do is probably check to see if the damn ferry's there.
See, I'm in a bad situation because I'm in Chicago. I'm in a city. There is not a lot. Like, I would, the only thing I could think, there are a couple of schools in my area, and I think it's pretty typical for schools to be built, like, prisons, unfortunately. So I would probably try to go to that. But my concern is that I feel like that would be where a lot of like the first aid and response things would be. And so there would probably be a lot of people in the schools, and I'd best case scenario have to do a Dawn of the Dead situation where me and whoever else is not a zombie is going to have to clear the zombies out of the school before we can actually use it.
Right.
Because, I mean, I live on the first floor of a building, and though my windows are a little higher up than, ground level, I do not see my home defenses holding out very long. I don't even know my upstairs neighbors, so they would probably not let me in, and I would die in my stairwell. I feel like that's what would happen if I tried to stay home.
Go ahead.
Okay.
I was just going to say, what about friends and family? What would you do?
See,
who you leaving, who you bringing?
That's a hard thing. I had this very earnest conversation with an ex. This wasn't why she's an ex, but it was an earnest conversation where we talked about it. Like, we watched, I think I've made no secret of it. I'm a big scary movie guy, so we would watch zombie movies together all the time. And, she would ask, those cute couple questions like, if we were running away from zombies, would you save me? And I was completely honest with her and said, look, I want to say yes. I do want to be the hero and be the guy who saves everyone. But I've never been in that situation. I have never been scared for a literal flesh eating monster behind my back. There's a real chance I'm tripping you and keeping on running. I just want you to know that that's a risk. I don't want that to be the case, but, I don't know how I'm going to respond in these moments. I've never been in that kind of life and death situation, because no one has ever been in that kind of life and death situation.
So you slept alone that night?
Possibly. This was a while ago. I'm no longer with this girl, so, I can't say I blame her. But
that's funny. You went the full logical route that you thought this out instead of just giving her what she wanted to hear.
Oh, sure. I've had that conversation with other people since. I don't want to lie to somebody. Let's be real.
Chicago and I'm hanging out with you and a zombie outbreak happens, I know that's pretty much it for me and you. You're gone.
I feel like you're a bigger dude than me. There's a real chance that the zombie is going to take you down before it gets to me, because I'm going to be running more. But I don't know. I don't know what your cardio is like.
I play soccer.
Okay.
I'm a goalkeeper.
Okay. Well, there you go. So you're used to blocking and defending, and whereas I occasionally run.
I can run. Just because I'm a goalkeeper doesn't mean that I don't run.
Okay. I'm not going to disparage the fine goalkeepers of this country and abroad. Yeah, I don't know. My most, again, with friends and family in this area, most of the people that I would have any attempt to save or anything like that are in the same boat. They live in a city. They live in an area that's got shitty defenses. There are some friends that I would try to get to first, but I have friends on the other side of town that they might as well be in the moon. I'm not gonna, I don't have anything to go with them. There's no way that I'm going to get from Logan Square to Pilsen across a city filled with zombies.
Right.
And that's a couple of miles.
And I suppose I could get to my back roads to help save my parents. And I have a Chihuahua named Chewy, and I would have to carry him because I couldn't imagine him getting eaten or anything. That's my boy.
That's the hard part of this is my dog. My dog is such a little princess. There is no way she's making it through a zombie thing. And the worst part, and this was another thing that got me in trouble with my ex in the same zombie conversation, was my biggest concern about the zombie apocalypse is either watching my dog get eaten by zombies or eaten by me out of necessity.
Oh, I can't do that.
I don't want that to be the case, but let's be real. If it's the end of the world, there's no food, you can't go out because there's flesh-eating monsters out there, and you're gonna just starve if you don't eat the damn dog.
I'm not eating my dog.
All right,
I've been like The Simpsons. I'm not going to choke my dog, man.
I mean, I've never choked my dog. I've never hit my dog. Every time I've accidentally stepped on my dog, it's been the worst experience in my life because I can't explain how sorry I am to her. Like, but it's a dog. Let's be real. I love my dog like so much. She's basically my child because, you know, I'm one of those childless millennials that everybody loves to hate.
And Chewie will take the same bullet before I eat him.
You wouldn't try to be like the Mist and take out Chewie before you took out yourself?
No. We'll go together.
Well, you know what? We're coming up past our hour, and once we get to talking about eating dogs, maybe it's time we move on to sunnier prospects. With the last few minutes of our show, let's do our weekly picks. So, what you reading, what you watching, what you playing?
Well, everyone's going to get tired of hearing what I'm playing for a while because I'm still stuck
FIFA,
on FIFA.
FIFA's still going.
FIFA, yeah, gotcha. I know. I got to make my team the best in the world, so... And I haven't messed with Destiny any. That's the two that I've been rotating back and forth still. I want to go back and play Friday the 13th since they've upgraded it, or updated it, not upgrade.
Yeah, there's another new counselor coming later this month. And I think that I read something about a new play mode, but I don't know what that would be.
But is the game playable now?
Yeah, totally. Like, there were server issues this weekend because everybody was playing it because it was Friday the 13th weekend and it was a double XP weekend, but it's very playable.
All right, well, I need to pick it back up. So, yeah, that's my gaming. Every week it'll be FIFA for another couple weeks probably. Reading, what have I read? I haven't read a whole lot this week. I read Made Men, which was a nice surprise. I wasn't aware of it until I got my hands on the second issue. And that's about... I can't think of her first name. Her last name happens to be Frankenstein, and she's a Detroit police officer, and her unit gets ambushed, and she brings them all back to life. So that was interesting how that's going on. That's only two issues in.
Mm-hmm.
And what else did I read? Oh, Deadpool versus Old Man Logan.
How is that book?
I mean... I enjoyed it for what it was. I've seen people say, you know, it's nothing special. And it's not, because it's Deadpool and Wolverine. You know what you're going to get, and this book is exactly what you expect you're going to get. So you're going to read it to enjoy it. It's not a comic that's going to change the world or anything. It's two of everyone's fan favorites, and it's just an enjoyable story. So... either you want to read them or you don't, but it's nothing life-changing. I mean, it's Deadpool and Logan.
Yeah. So.
And watching, I haven't caught up anything. I need to watch Stranger Things still. My 31 Days of Horror has been shot to shit. I didn't get past day three. And that's where I'm at with that. So what?
I mean... you got to get on that Stranger Things kick. The new season starts on the 27th.
I know, and then The Punisher is coming out on the 17th. So, yeah, this weekend I might just try and catch up on stuff.
Is it 17th of October?
No, November.
Okay, yeah, I thought it was November. Yeah, I mean, Stranger Things is a quick watch. It's 8 episodes, an hour long, and it's a very bingeable show. And talk about soundtracks. That show is fucking fantastic. There was actually this pop-up bar in my neighborhood that was Stranger Things themed. That was really cool. But they got probably the most polite cease and desist letter I've ever read online from the makers of the show, saying, hey, it's cool. Like, we've seen the pictures. It looks like you guys are real big fans of our show, and we don't want to, you know, like, you know, fart on your parade here. But you're going to... have to, you know, cut it off. You guys said it was going to run launched on one series of pop-up bars that are all themed, which is kind of neat. But as for me, playing, I still am doing some Friday the 13th stuff, but because I am now a PlayStation Plus member, I got free access to the newest version of Metal Gear Solid, Phantom Pain, and I started playing that. That game... I don't know that I'm going to get as into it as I have other games I've been playing lately. Like, I felt like obligated because it's free and I remember liking the original Metal Gear Solid. Well, not the original Metal Gear Solid. I don't think I ever played the one on Nintendo. But, like, the Metal Gear Solid that was on PlayStation, I remember having fun with. So I'm going to give that the old college try. So far, I've only done 1.5 missions. Let's see. Reading this week's book of Generation X was really good. In it, Quentin Quire, Hindsight, and Benjamin Deeds, a.k.a. the new Morph, have to perform a heist at a supervillain death ray auction, which is pretty cool. Conceptually, at least, it was really cool. And the writing was great. You know, the great character developments, a solid story. The art was not so good. I really want to like the art of the book, but the guy that they have, I think his name is Eric Koda, it's a little too cartoony, and like his figures are all like wonky from time to time. Like there's this little segment that I included in my review on the website AIPTcomics.com.
Shameless plug.
Oh, of course, always. I feel no shame. You heard me tell an ex-girlfriend that I would potentially kick her and leave her to zombies. So clearly, shame is not a big thing in my life.
Yeah, I've learned a lot from you tonight.
Oh yeah, cold-blooded. Yeah, there's a sequence where Jubilee's like baby Shogo is like sitting next to a character, and he looks up, and he looks like a baby at first, and then he turns his head slightly to the side, and suddenly he looks like this weird old man. He looks like a fat Leonard Nimoy all of a sudden, and it's just like really bad, like the flubbing of the face, and that kind of goes throughout the book. Let's see, watching. I've started the show Gifted. And it is thoroughly okay. I don't have a lot negative to say about it. I don't have a lot positive to say about it. I like some of the characters. I think it's weird that they made the central family the Struckers. Because in that Generation X book, now that I think about it, we get to see the actual Strucker twins in... the on panel, and in the comics the Strucker twins are bad guys, they're villains, they're actually like incestuous Nazis basically,
right?
But on the show they're like a regular family, and the dad is like conflicted about doing the right thing because he's been a prosecutor of mutants, but like he seems like a good dude, like it seems like he's on the up and up. I think that it's just a weird choice. Like, you could have put any last name on there. I don't know if there's a reason that they chose Strucker, like, if they're going to, like, do some sort of swerve ahead. It just feels like an odd choice. But overall, I think the show is pretty good. I'll take it over really any other comic TV series that's actually on TV at this point, as opposed to Netflix.
Oh, wow.
I'd say it's better than Gotham. It's better than Arrow. Like, way better than Arrow. I probably put it on par with The Flash. The Flash is actually kind of fun, whereas Gifted tries to be more serious. So, they're different demographics. Obviously, with the CW, there's still a lot of, like, relationship stuff and, like, girly elements to The Flash. Not to say girly as a negative, but, like, it is... Their primary demographic is teenage girls, and it kind of shows in their... their right. choice of casting and script writing, but yeah, so
it's worth checking out then.
I think so. Like there are 3 episodes in, they're all pretty good episodes. The special effects are better than I would have anticipated. It's better than the Inhumans, which is a low bar.
I didn't even touch that.
I started it. My girlfriend, who hasn't really followed comics very much, keeps calling Black Bolt the King of the Moon, which is one of my favorite little phrases that I think I've heard in quite a while. But yeah, it's a good show. Speaking of good shows, I think this was a pretty good show. And if you think it's a pretty good show, you should like us, subscribe, do all the good things that you can on iTunes or wherever you might be listening to us. You can even listen to us on the website, AIPTcomics.com or AdventuresInPoorTaste.com if you feel like writing it all out. I want to say thanks to my co-host Dave for sticking with me in this zombie talk.
It's always fun, a lot of fun, and I hope you're...
see, now I know you have a current girlfriend. I hope she listens to this so she knows that if there's zombies happening, she probably better get away from you.
We've had the conversation. She knows what's up. Dave, how can these good folks find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at Psychotic, and that's Sycotic.
And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Felix Lancaster, spelled exactly like you think. And if you spell it wrong, then, you know, follow that guy, too. That maybe Felix Lancaster could use some follows on his Twitter page. So for Dave and myself and all the good folks at AIPTComics.com, we want to thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.
Take care, everyone.